Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2021. This is the third of four streams tonight. I'm here with Snorkel Blog. But first, I want to say that I've had two internet outages tonight in the last hour. It might happen again. If it does, don't worry, I will be back. It'll just take a couple of minutes. So my apologies for that. It's very annoying, but these things happen. And I've got a feeling that my internet is crap tonight. So there we are, just to let you know in advance. Now, Snorkel Blog, welcome to Millennial. Please introduce yourself to the audience.
My name actually isn't Snorkel Blog. I'm Nathan. I do a little Telegram channel called Snorkel Blog, as well as an Odyssey. And I just talk. Okay, why am I called Snorkel Blog? My name's Snorkel Blog because I used to have this nickname called Snorkel, I think, for some reason back in like primary school. And when I signed up for Telegram, I thought it was just a joke thing because I got kicked off of Twitter and Facebook. And so I just signed up as a joke and I was like, what can I use? And so I went for Snorkel. But then I've been thinking about it. And I think that, you know, Snorkel, you put it in your mouth and you put it above the water and you're sucking air even though you're in another atmosphere. And I think there's something there. Maybe like you're in the mire and you're hanging on to truth. You're hanging on to something that keeps you alive. And my idea is that the snorkel, even though I spelled it in the English way and not as a joke way, is kind of a search for truth or a sucking for truth. That's what my channel is all kind of about. But it's I'm not a red philosopher. I'm not a red, you know, any of those socialist people. I just like to try different things and see where I can shed my previous soy mannerisms and try to become a man.
Do you see yourself as a recovering, like a former soy boy?
Well, that's a good question. So structurally,
let's say first, what is a soy boy? Now, I would say a soy boy is someone who is very pampered. It's a man in the modern age who is very pampered by consumerism, the stability of what Western societies, and is quite feminine and childlike because of that, because he's never had to really struggle.
Right.
That's what I would say. And is also, he's absorbed all the liberal progressive talking points. So he's basically a feminist and is also quite scared, not strong, not masculine. That's what I would say as a soy boy. I don't know if you would describe yourself in those ways, but go ahead.
I'm fair being pretty harsh to my old self. I'm not sure if I was all of those things, but you know, I was just a regular person. You know, whatever was taught in school, I just sort of believed. It just made, you know, it was in the textbook. Why would it be a lie? I took post-colonial literature in university. That was my main stream in uni. Doing English literature. I didn't drink soy, so that's not there. I used to work construction and stuff like that. So structurally, I was, and I used to work out. I was not a soy boy, but I was in the mainstream. And I've never been too far left. I've never been too far right. I've never been too far centrist either. I've just always been there. And maybe in my own way, I was an NPC. Maybe I still am. I don't know. But back when it was like, you should be a feminist, I was probably like, maybe I should be a feminist. But yeah.
Would you say that you became more politically aware or more independent from the mainstream as you got older?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm 42 right now. So a little bit older than you. And I was, yeah, just a normal guy, just a normal guy. Although I was always racially aware, but recently, probably in the last 6 years, things started to change for me.
So what do you mean? Okay, that's interesting. What do you mean by racial, that you were always racially aware? I mean, you should maybe say where you grew up, roughly.
Okay, right. So I was born in southern Sweden, actually in a Bible school. Some of you might know it. I'm not a public figure and I'm not famous or anything like that, but I was born in a Bible school in southern Sweden. My father's family are Swedish. My mom's family are, I think, Scottish. Well, my mom, she can't get a tan, so whatever that means.
Scottish.
Okay, well then we moved to the States and then to Canada. And I've spent 12 years also in Asia now. So that's my physical background. Racially aware, Sweden always for the Swedes. That just made sense. Japan for the Japanese, Germany for the Germans. It just made sense. And things seemed very strange when suddenly Sweden got an influx of foreigners. And when I moved from the States, I was in California, and where was it? Los Angeles. And we moved from there, which was all Mexican, to Canada. I was like, I haven't seen so many white people and felt such peace outside of Sweden. And that was the end of the 90s. And of course, 4 years later, they were really pushing for mass immigration. And Canada was really, really excited to pass Norway at the time as being the best place for immigrants to come into. And yeah.
God, it's hard to believe that. Yeah, it's hard to believe that it was like that even in the early 2000s. But of course it was. Of course it was. That's how we got to where we are now.
Yep.
But even to think that we've got to make our country pleasant for immigrants to come to, going to make it inviting for them to come to, it just seems so insane now. You know, after the migrant crisis, 2015 and all that, I don't know. I guess that the mainstream position is that you should still be like that. You should still be thinking about how to get more people to come from the third world. It just seems insane.
I'll tell you something interesting. So I'm living in Japan right now. That's why it's bright outside. And Japan doesn't have a lot of immigrants, but their politics right now are pushing to have a lot of immigrants. Now, they're not taking refugees at the moment, but there's so much groundwork laid here. And almost every foreigner I meet is super excited about turning Japan into Germany, or turning Japan into, I mean, not Germany as it was, but Germany as it is. And that being through refugee migrations, or just multiculturalism in general. And so it used to be when I first visited Japan, I was doing construction volunteering at a church. You'd meet a foreigner and there'd be this kind of like, it'd be like, who are you? And now it's kind of like, hey, dude, you're another foreigner, man, let's be friends. And they, like, I'll be on the street and there's a Sri Lankans. And they're like, hey, man, you're a foreigner, so let's group up. And it's like, it's the Japanese haven't understood it yet, but it's coming. And they are not prepared for it. There's a farm over there. It's all Vietnamese running.
Yeah.
If you go to a convenience store, it's right now basically what it was in the early part of 2000 or maybe late 90s in Canada. So you go to a convenience store, most of the general clerk staff are like Chinese, or sometimes they're South Asians. And it's the factories are basically Brazilians. And yeah, made in Japan is not what you think it is.
So people in our movement often think that of Japan as an example, an ethnostate, an example of how that can succeed even in this era of, you know, globalization, mass immigration. You can stick to your guns and keep your country for your own people, the native group who have inhabited that land. And they also, a lot of people think that Japan is aware of the dangers of mass immigration because they've seen what has happened to the West. How true is that?
Japan was conquered by Zog, as we know, and it is just an arm of Zog. And so as such, I've got a neighbor down the street, and I was telling her about the project that I'm working on with these other families, these hippies, basically. And she's like, that sounds great, because my daughter's going to school and all she's learning about is how evil the Japanese are and how the Japanese have to change through mass immigration and other things. And so that is something that might have existed, but certainly does not exist anymore. So Japan is under the same structural changes that it's under a lot of the same structural changes that basically everywhere is, that won or lost in a certain war a long time ago. So yeah.
So would you see it as a country that is, and I have seen articles online, newspaper articles, saying that Japan needs mass immigration, you know, otherwise it won't survive, kind of thing. So is that going on within Japan as well?
Yeah, well, actually, it's quite funny. Now, there's certain, so I actually have a friend whose father is a very interesting guy who writes for a newspaper here, and he writes basically about how Japan must change to become, you know, just like Canada, etc. And of course, he's a Canadian citizen. I can't say more about him, but yeah, it's and that's how it is in all of the foreign language newspapers here in Japan, and a lot of the native Japanese ones. I mean, even your staunch conservative is absolutely for some sort of mass migration.
It's just incredible. And the thing is, in the West, there's a certain, we seem to be moving on from that. I think there's a lot more skepticism about mass immigration than there was 5 years ago or 10 years ago, definitely like 20 years ago. I think people are now much, there's now an awareness of the dangers of multiculturalism, the dangers of Islam, for example, fundamentalist Islam, that wasn't there 20 years ago. And it is, right. I think it's now undeniable. At least journalists and politicians feel that they have to pay some lip service to it. Yeah. They have to pretend to share the public's concerns about it. Go on.
No, let's think of it. I haven't started, but I'll say, yeah, no, it's, well, in Japan, of course, you know how we get, there's this thing like history repeats itself. We have to learn from the past. It never happens. We know this. Never happens. Like people, I mean, even your headline from 2 weeks ago, we'll forget, you know, 2 weeks later, if it's not constantly in there. Like, we're, you know, 3 months ago, we were all worried about, even us, we were all worried about South Africans, and now it's South Africans isn't really, you know, the South African whites. It's not really on the plate that we're really talking about at the moment. And things for every group change, and we just forget about them. We've got this collective amnesia, and the Japan has that, of course, in the same way that everyone else does, but it also has a degree of separation. So, and its news system is hooked into the same news system that we have. In other words, they don't get any negative imagery. They don't get any negative input about it. The immigration is a great thing. You're going to get kebab around the corner. It's going to be freaking amazing. You know, it's all about the food. And
it is all about the food. It's amazing, even now, if you get a liberal to defend mass immigration, that is what they will say. It's an amazing thing that they go, and it's a cliche that I came up with quite a few years ago, that the incredible range of restaurants, and that they still say it. I mean, there's no self-awareness about this at all. There's no awareness of how stupid and hollow an answer that is, and how shallow it is to basically give away your homeland, your ancestral, your birthright for the sake of having a wider range of restaurants. It's especially stupid because you could have that wide range of restaurants without mass immigration.
Yep.
You know, I'm sure we can work out how to make kebabs, for fuck's sake.
That's crazy. One good point about Japan. In one way, they do have a wide range of restaurants, and the way they've done it is back since the Meiji Restoration days, they sent a lot of Japanese overseas to learn different things, and so we got some damn good Italian restaurants, got some damn good French restaurants, on and on. Am I allowed to say damn?
Yes.
Okay. So loads of good that sort of restaurant here in Japan, run by Japanese. Whether or not that's a good thing, it's up to you. But then, of course, it's those other cultural elements. Those restaurants are never done by Japanese. And not that they would have to be, not that we'd need those restaurants, but that thing is coming in fast and hard. Fast and hard, yeah.
Yeah. But you obviously are not a typical citizen of Japan. You're... Right. Obviously much more connected to the West, yes. And you're aware of, and you watch chat channels like mine, you're aware of all of this, so you have a particular perspective, and you're seeing Japan as an outsider, in a sense.
Yes. By the way, I didn't say thank you. I didn't say thank you for inviting me on. I was not expecting that. It was, for everyone watching, like a year ago or so, I was like, hey, Millennial Woes, do you mind if I post this link in your channel about a thing that I was starting and I still haven't started. He's like, yeah, go ahead. And, or just, I'm sorry, well, yeah, go ahead, however your voice is. And then, I did that. Now the thing that I really want to do with my life or online isn't properly started. And so that was a failure, but, I was never expected to be on your show. And by the way, I drive in my car talking about whatever I perceive to be truth and how to get out of this mire that I think I'm in and just maybe hopefully poke into something real for all of us. And it was the model of early millennial woes that I was kind of like, I like that. Now, I'm not as well spoken or as, you know, careful with my words as you are. But you know, if you're driving, think about, I'm a driving millennial woes with an international Canadian accent.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's, back then I just did what seemed natural at the time. And that, you know, that's why, you know, the atmosphere in the videos was like that. 'Cause that's what it was like in my room. That wasn't sort of affected. And then wearing the dressing gown because I was unemployed and, you know, just, I wore my dressing gown all the time. So it was just exactly as I was living. It wasn't sort of planned like that. It just happened that way. But it does seem to be a format that, and a lot of people liked, and they still talk about it now, that it was a fairly unique. But I mean, you see, the thing is, it wasn't that unique. It like back then, there were quite a few people making, who had YouTube channels in which they would just sit in their room and talk to the webcam. It wasn't, so, you know, I think it wasn't unique for sure what I was doing. I think it was maybe just the pacing was...
The frankness was unique.
Wow. Yeah. That's both an advantage and a disadvantage. In the long run, because people, yeah. Anyway, that's my own story. It doesn't really matter. So I want to get into the topics that you wanted to talk about. So, you are, yeah, this is where I was going with it.
Yeah.
You are aware of the global situation, yes. Mass immigration, multiculturalism, globalization, and now with COVID. This new era that has started, and so you wanted to talk about let's talk first about COVID, because you've got this note here. Is it a psyop against Europeans, or is it a real world problem for the entire world? So would you like to go into that?
All right, I guess so. Early on, maybe this year, or maybe it was late last year. Again, I'm not like a great philosopher. I don't have this great perspective on the world early on. I'm not like an alt scold. It's like figure things out like the day of or 2 days before. I'm not like that. So I'm just a regular guy. And, you know, for the first couple of weeks, I was like, I better wear a mask. I better be terribly worried about it. Then after, I was like, my eyes have not seen anyone get sick, and this is a terrible thing. And then a couple of months later, it's like, yeah, whatever. However, through all of this, what I saw, especially as the protest grew, and I used to go to some of those anti-lockdown and anti-COVID Telegram channels, and I would listen to interviews, and it seemed like a lot of the leadership there and a lot of the people that were participating in the channels or going to these great marches were hyper liberal.
Was this happening in Japan as well? Anti-lockdown marches.
There are. They're very small. But there are some anti-lockdown ones. I haven't gone to one yet. I was supposed to in November. Turned out It was the same day as Thanksgiving. So.
Okay. So let's get back to what you said about them being liberals. That's a good point.
Okay. So, for instance, I can't remember, is it the speaker? I think it's Speaker UK I'd go to. And if I went on, now that's not specifically an anti-lockdown. It's not a specifically anti-COVID channel. It's kind of, it started, as far as I understand, it's kind of like free speech thing. And I would go there at 1 p.m. or 2 p.m. in Japan time when I'm doing like mowing my lawn or something like that. I would listen while people were chatting. And invariably, these people would be talking about anti-COVID, anti-lockdown. They would go to the march, etc. And then they'd be talking about how, they'd bring up the the Hebrew Israelite, the black Hebrew Israelites, and how they were the real, and they'd be listening to hip hop, and they were just, and it was just, and these are white guys, and they were just idolizing another race. And then I would look at a lot of the interviews that people would be doing about this thing, and there's just this vibe that we all just have to come together in this sort of Babylonian, like, Tower of Babel sense. We have to come together and defeat this thing as one. And it's not this, and I agree with that. Listen, if this is a world problem, if this is a thing that all of us have to defeat, there obviously we need allies, but it was more than that. It was like, and they were all anti-racialist. They had no, everyone I've seen that's publicly talking about it basically is like, there's no black, there's no white, there's no European, there's no whatever. And we just have to defeat this as some amorphous blob, and we can do this as humanity. And it's true. We need allies. We need to understand the human element in this. We have to understand that the Japanese have to take it on from a Japanese perspective and defeat it. And they're going to need to shake hands with other people, and same with the Germans and the Swedes. But I got this sixth sense here that we're also sort of defeating the European who's already like cowered in this corner with 20 or 30% of its population foreign, whatever it is, I don't know what it is, and whose onslaught constantly bring in more, and you know, if we're bad, there's some reaction against that. But then this COVID thing, which seems to be, for the people that are anti-lockdown and anti-mask and all this, there's this overwhelming deluge that seems, that's just like, just, there's no identity in it apart from tackling this thing. And this thing, I don't know how to word it properly, but
I suppose it's kind of similar to the American conservative, sort of mainstream conservative, who will say, I don't care what race you are, Americans can be any race, as long as they're pro-gun, as long as they're pro-freedom. If you like freedom, then you're American. The result of that will be the extinction of his people, the end of his ethnic group. But at least everyone will have a gun, sort of thing. I mean, it's kind of silly, you know. And I can imagine what you're talking about as a white liberal Brit or Swede or Norwegian or whatever, saying we've just all got to come together to defeat the COVID psyop. And they might well say that it's a Nazi style. It's the Nazis. And that is always amazing how often they say that and not it's communist. Of course, for obvious reasons. But also, I don't really think it's communist either, for what it's worth.
Now, but you anyway, were saying that in, was that Philosopher Cat's channel or was it? No, it was with Malone, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. But either way, this liberal attitude, there are people who are liberals who are opposed to the lockdown and opposed to the vaccine, but they're coming at it from a progressive perspective. They basically want things to go back to 2015, just as the centrist and the conservative want things to go back to 1995 or 2005, just immediately before we got gay marriage. If we could just go... before then, kind of thing. And stop caring about race. Everyone should be the same. So everyone is, just as for Alex Jones, everyone is united. All these different races are united in their love of guns. For the liberal lockdown opponent, everyone is united. All these different races are united in their opposition to the vaccine and the lockdown. And so we all merge together in a glorious rebellion against the Nazis who are bringing in the COVID and the lockdown and the vaccine. I mean, it is a very strange worldview to you and me, because obviously it's not the Nazis. It's not a Nazi thing. That's ridiculous. Nazis have had no power whatsoever since 1945. It's absolutely ridiculous to suggest that this is a Nazi thing or that it's Nazi in its mentality. And I think that's what a lot more people would say, that okay, yeah, of course it's not the Nazis, but it's the same as them, though, because world domination or something. I mean, that is also stupid. Yeah. And so there is, it's frustrating because the liberal that you're talking about who opposes the lockdown, yes, they oppose the lockdown, but they're doing it from a perspective that is incorrect. It's right. Deluded. Now, whether that damages them, their ability to oppose the lockdown, I don't know. It might well be that they can oppose the lockdown and have this delusional worldview.
Yeah.
Or it might be that delusional worldview debilitates them. I don't know.
Yeah. I stopped going to those things. And you know, I still enjoy sometimes listening to, by the way, there's a gentleman here in Japan named Simon Crims. He's written an interesting book called Roller Dog. I was actually going to bring it up and show it up on the stream, but I'm not. And I met him in real life just a couple of weeks ago. We were down, my family, by the way, before it's in here. Yeah. So I am married to a Japanese national and I have a half Japanese and half general Northern European child. And so my perspective is mixed all around, and I understand a lot of the criticisms toward my position. By the way, I started this thing, I started my family long before I came to any sort of my modern stances on things. But anyway, yeah, I'll take the criticism. But anyway, we were down there with our family, and I met this guy, and he's more staunchly anything I've met in anyone almost online. And we're chatting, and he's gone to these rallies, and he does it for networking purposes, but he said the same thing. He's like, the people there are generally just hyper, they don't realize it, but they're hyper progressives from a very foundational standpoint. They might call themselves conservatives. They might call them themselves, you know, anti-liberals or whatever. But they're hyper on the progressive side. And for him, it was a black pill in its own way. And for me, that's a hard thing to deal with. It's almost like the so I'm a Christian, by the way, but I have this complicated relationship with Christianity, because it seems to be that the basic tenor is that the foreigner that's accepted Christ is more your brother than your kin. And you should treat them better than your kin. So that German over there, your neighbor that's either not a Christian or has rejected Christ, ain't your brother. But that person that lives down there in Zimbabwe, now that's your brother. Mm. And so it's there's kind of a similar vibe there. And that's it's why I brought up the Tower of Babel. Just because the Tower of Babel is something that a lot of Christians will talk about, and a lot of non-Christians will as well. Yeah,
I think it seems to be something that just appeals to people. The idea that we can all just get along and merge together, and these differences just don't matter. Skin color, who cares about skin color? Why would you care about that? And, you know, it's just a terrible trap for white liberal, and it's almost always white people who fall into this. Because Well, as you say, it means that they are married to progressive ideals, whether right. they realize it or not. They cannot see outside of the progressive worldview if they have yeah. this supposition that race doesn't matter, that it's not even a real thing, and that basically we should all become deracinated.
Right.
Because then the only thing left to be is a consumer, which puts you directly into the hands of Bill Gates, Klaus Schwab, George Soros,
yeah.
Jeff Bezos, etc. You have no resistance.
The craziest thing for me to think is that, so as a Christian, now I know that there's different slants that different denominations take, but like as a basic Christian, you're supposed to be evangelical to some extent. And that means spreading the gospel, right? But it seems to be, and now I know that there's people that would BTFO me here, and they'd be like, well, actually there's this whole apology for this, but like the more it seems to me that the more you spread the gospel, the worse the world gets, and the more integrated it also becomes. And so I don't know how you can as a Christian oppose globalism. And some listen, some petty nationalist Christian, please explain to me how you can oppose globalism when, you know, that person from Zimbabwe is more your brother than the German that's rejected Christ. And you're supposed to spread the same message, same exact message around the world, that spreads the same myths around the world, etc. I mean, it all just seems connected to me. And yeah, Tower of Babel.
See, this is the kind of thing that could generate a very deep rebellion across the world. You know, if we find out that there is this fundamental problem with Christianity, and which is, you know, still the dominant religion in the West and the basis for our moral code, if we establish that there is a fundamental problem with it, then a lot of people are going to be very annoyed and pissed off and confused and angry, and there's going to be they're going to feel that there's a need for a complete radical change in everything. Yeah. This is the kind of thing that could actually, that a force that strong might be strong enough to oppose globalism. But I mean, well, what would, as you know, you said that you're a Christian, so yeah. How do you feel about this? I mean, presumably you just said, as a Christian, how can you oppose globalism as a Christian? But you are a Christian and you do oppose globalism.
So let me try to explain my complicated relationship with Christianity. Whatever I just said, that's in the background. But I'm also kind of realistic here. And that is, what else have we as Europeans? Now, we have ephemeral, we have what we understand of the mythological that existed pre-Christianity. We have what the Christians wrote about, you know, different religions that used to exist and different traditions. We had what the Romans wrote, but we don't have anything in the present. As far as I see it, all of that's gone. The iconoclasm of, you know, certain faiths from that era of the world, or sorry, area of the world, have sort of taken over most of the world. And Europe, of course, is ground zero for what I understand is a complete destruction of previous traditions. Now, Nathan, how are you saying this as a Christian? Well, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? Be like, okay, I'm just gonna kind of like reinvent what I think, you know, heathenry is or something. I can't do that. I'm a normal guy. Like I would love to talk with like somebody like Survive the Jive, who has, I don't know how he's gotten to his positions, but he's obviously a man who has some snorkel to something that's ancient to, and he's connecting to it. But I don't have that. My family doesn't have that. And there's a channel called Debunking Atheists here, and he's right. Like what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to reject your ancestors who are Christian. It's all complicated. At this moment, like my ancestry is Christian, and way before that is pagan. And I'm Christian. I'm not going to say I'm a cultural Christian. I think that's a cop-out, because when I pray, I do pray to the Christian God. But I have a very complicated relationship with that God and that belief system. Yeah,
I see. So I don't know how to grapple with that, because I'm not a Christian, so I can't. I don't know what to ask you. I suppose I would say, do you think that this is... I mean, do you think that Christianity has much of a future in the West? Do you think it is the... Because you said earlier, what else do we have? There is paganism. Some people want that to take over. And a lot of people are concerned that Islam is going to take over, because obviously that would be a radical change for European culture, fundamental change. I mean,
I don't think there's a way. I think the only way for that to happen would be through, you know, numbers of foreigners coming in. I don't think the European man is, unless he's completely destroyed, I don't think there's any way for that religion to take over. But yeah, I mean, once you have a vacuum, it's true. And at the moment, I mean, yeah, Christianity create. I mean, yeah, whatever. We're where we are, and at this point, like. Part of what I'm trying to do, what I'm trying to establish within myself is a self that realizes mistakes that he's made, and accepting them and not trying to, I'm the type of person that worries. I have been through my life. I've been a pessimist. I've been the type of person that worries about things that I've done in the past and wish I could change them. But you can't. You can't do that. That is absolutely retarded. There's no way to do that. And it's just, it's a waste of time. And so, you know, there's, I'm not sure if you watched the short 5-minute video that Hapa Perspective did 2 days ago. And it's about God helps those who help themselves.
Yeah, I shared it. Yeah, I liked that one. Yeah,
it's a good video. Now, he and I take slightly different perspective on a couple of different things, but we both like woodworking. We're both amateurs. By the way, I woodwork. I now bamboo work. And why do I bamboo work? Because it's something to learn. And also in Telegram, Lieutenant Colonel Evola has a channel. And 6 months ago, he's like, take the one push-up a day challenge. I'm like, what's the one push-up a day challenge? Because that seems too easy. And he's like, it's because it's too easy. Set goals for yourself that you can absolutely fulfill. If you're doing the 200 push-up a day challenge, you could probably do it. You know, start 10 here, 10 here, you know, and throughout the entire day, do 200 push-ups. But you might screw up and only do 190. You might screw up and you know, maybe that day you had a party and you don't finish your last 90. And then it's like, I didn't do my 200 push-ups. Well, his challenge is this. You do one. One is the minimum that you do. If you can do more, you do more. If you can only do one, do that one. And after 14 days, you should be able to do two. And you will have actually achieved something. And even if you can do 200 a day, but you commit to one, it's almost impossible not to do one push-up a day. So it's a goal that's achievable on the day. It's a goal that's achievable on the bi-weekly or whatever you call it, on the fortnight. And I'm doing it right now. By the way, this is crazy. The other day I actually failed. So I've actually reset. I'm on my third day of the Lieutenant Colonel Evola, I think that's what his channel is called, 14-day one push-up a day challenge. And if you can do more, you do more. But the end of it, you're supposed to be able to do like one-legged squats, like after a month or something like that. I'm not sure I'll be there in a month, but these small things, they're incredible. And Hapa Perspective's right. You just try something and get out of your rut. Just try something and fail. I'm putting bamboo to bamboo. I've never worked with bamboo. I didn't know bamboo was this like. It didn't exist. It never existed in my life. And now bamboo, it's here in Japan. But I mean, I grew up in Sweden and Canada and America. And none of the places I grew up had bamboo. Bamboo was a thing in the textbooks. And now we've chopped down bamboo and we're putting it together. And I'm making a wood drying rack out of bamboo. And I screwed up a couple of pieces. But I'm learning how to put bamboo to bamboo. It's awesome. Small goals.
I do think that these are useful tips, and I think that we should probably have some way to I wish we did have some way to organize this stuff, you know, online workshops and classes that people can take part in. Again, that would probably need to be monetized in order to be realistic, because if people pay money for something, then they're more likely to stick to it, stick with the course. And of course, if people are being paid to do those, to run those courses, then they're more likely to run them. This is the kind of thing that, sorry?
I said, I'm looking at you, Hapa. He's probably watching and I'm trying to push him. I'm trying to push him. Right.
Okay. Yeah, this is the kind of thing and of course, there needs to be ways to advertise those things, you know, get people aware of them. So I'm sure that's stuff we just need to put together the infrastructure for that. It's not that difficult at all. But anyway, to get back on track, we were talking about, what were we talking about? Christianity, paganism, and Islam.
Yeah.
I mean, this is obviously a massive topic. I'm not sure.
We got 15 minutes. Why don't we talk about it?
Because atheism is obviously, it's got us to a bad position. It's made us very vulnerable. Yes. So, but I don't know what's going to take over from it. And actually, the Great Reset, Klaus Schwab, the latest video from him is about the great narrative. And you know, Red Ice posted it, and they said something like that. This is going to be some kind of spirituality. It's going to be a pseudo religion. it's going to be a replacement for religion. And I do wonder about that. I wonder, are they aware that mankind needs some kind of religion?
So, oh, of course they are. Of course.
So we're going to provide them with one that will be in total accordance with the climate change agenda, the globalization agenda, mass immigration, progressive agenda, LGBT. Yeah.
Right.
But it will be a religion.
Of course. I mean, even if you're a Christian, you read your Bible, you know there's going to be a one world government and a religion that's going to take over, etc. And whether you take the perspective of anyone with money could fulfill the goals or the prophecies of the Bible, which I take, you're like, Nathan, I thought you were a Christian. Well, it's complicated. Or you take the perspective that this is all just perfect fulfillment, supernatural fulfillment of scripture. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Absolutely. And there's this other thing. Here's a funny thing. So my parents are Christians. Most of my family are Christians, and Christianity, like most religions, it's a pick and take religion. So you've got your scripture and you've got the things that you follow and you've got the things you don't follow, and you've got your dogmas that you follow and don't follow. And then you have your denominational dogmas, etc. And you cleave to this one or that one. My parents go to a church where the pastor is a female. Now, St. Paul specifically called that out. A woman shall not have authority over a man. She shall not stand up and preach in church or speak in church. But they go to a church with a female pastor. Funny, and then there's this added element. I was chatting with him the other day. I was bringing up some of the things that we chat. Well, not that you and I chat, but like that we chat in our general groups. We're chatting, and they're like, Nathan, how can you believe in that? That's anti-scriptural. And it's like Paul would say this, and it's like, well, at what point do you take Paul's word here, and then you discard it? Whoa, that's my hand. At what point do you take Paul's word on one hand and then discard it on the other, if he's supposed to be directly linked with God? And they're like, well, St. Paul is not Jesus Christ. So we won't take, you know, that thing about the women preaching in church. Or no, but okay. Well, what about this other thing that St. Paul said? Was that not inspired by Christ? And there's so many questions, but again, it's like, what's my lifeline at this? What is my lifeline? And I think we all, maybe I'm not trying to be, I'm not a general religionist, although I'm a traditionalist. I believe that there's truth to some extent in all religions that are not just quack things. Maybe I should probably have said that. I'm more of a traditionalist philosophically and religiously, but I am, I'm a Christian. I believe in logos. I believe in all that stuff. Complicated.
Yeah. Okay. And then you also wanted to talk about the elite question. I know you did a vlog, an MP3, yes. Podcast. That's the word I'm looking for.
There you are.
In response to one of my Graham episodes, I think it was.
Yes.
So can you summarize that? Just because I can't remember exactly what it was that I'd said. But you go for it.
Okay, so it was, by the way, I haven't, let me try to say, I'll try to couch this quickly. What I am doing in the real life right now with some hippies that live in the same housing area that we live in, a couple, one is a half French, half Japanese, the other is a half Japanese, half Brazilian. So yes, the structure elements are problematic. And the other people are Japanese families that are grouped into this school that these people run. And this school is branching out into trying to make a farm from the school. And that farm is going to be connected to other homeschooling groups. And they're very few and far between in Japan. I'm probably out of a million people, you might have one people, or not one, you might have like 100 people doing homeschooling, maybe, if that. And most of the homeschools are basically categorized or sort of peopled by kids who do not fit normal schools. So it's not like the parents are like, we want to homeschool our kids because we don't like the system. So that's the general milieu that we're trying to do this in. But what we're doing is the school is going to be focused on farming. The kids are going to be learning that. At the same time, they're going to be learning little bits of English, little bits of Japanese, little bits of maths, practical sciences, stuff like that. But we're focusing on trying to make this area. We have, it's just 1.6 acres, a tiny bit of land. We've got a professional grape farmer who's coming in to help us make grapes. We're going to sell what we make, what we harvest. The kids are going to be learning that. We're going to make a gravity powered what is it called? Wash basin. We're going to collect our rainwater, use that for washing. We have fire to cook. We might get some solar panels that no one needs anymore in order just to have a little bit of electricity. But it's going to be a bit on where's the finger? A bit pioneerish on one side, and a bit forward thinking in another way. But the idea is to get the kids to grow up separate from the system. I don't want to send my girl to school where she learns, one, that half of her ancestry is bad, her native ancestry, and then the other half, of course, is bad because they're European. And then, of course, wear masks, stay a meter apart or 2 meters apart from other kids. Outside on the way to school, the kids in Japan walk to school for an hour or half an hour. They walk to school wearing a mask outside in nature under God's sun. You know, I'm not going to do that. But anyway, whilst in, I think in July or August, something like that, really hot, I was clearing the land with our director, and I took a breather, got in the car, and it was the day before I listened to your podcast, and you were talking about, you know, I think if I had half an hour, you're like, if I had half an hour, I could, a speech, a half hour prepared speech. I think that, by the way, when I do your voice, this is not how you sound, obviously, but when I pretend like I'm someone else, I always do the same voice. Actually, I got two voices. I got the critical voice, where like, wah, rah, rah, and then I got the kind of like this person's introspective. So here's the introspective voice. I think that if I had enough time, to prepare a half hour speech and give it to the right elites, I could convince them that they're going down a wrong path. And the way that you had couched it was that your maybe not role, but your strength lied in how you could put ideas together, how you could maybe speak to people in a manner that would unlock certain parts of their, you know, either their moral their moral structure, their psychology, whatever, and get them to consider things. And I was just thinking about it. It's like that's not me, but that is a role that someone else has. And I've been watching you only since, I think it's 2018. The Distributist was talking about you a lot. And so I was like, okay, check this guy out. And then I, you know, subscribed and I liked your channel. And was kind of sad that it was already after you'd kind of like started your hiatus.
It was. Unfortunately.
But, you know, everyone trans... You know, there's a season for everything, right? I have a consumer YouTube channel that I hate now, but I keep going because I have to continue reviewing the stuff that I have until it's done. And, you know, so I'm over that, but I'm still doing it. And the structure of your own channel has gone through different, you know, different phases and whatever. And I'm not saying that you hated what you did, but there's just different phases. And so anyway, it seems the current phase... maybe you're in a more of a not interest, but you're cogitating over a whole bunch of things. And maybe you're looking over what you did in the past, and you're looking over how the landscape of sort of this, whatever this dissonant thing is. And you're looking over things that are going around the world, and you're kind of piecing things together. And for you, I guess you're the type of person that might be able to, you know, yeah, put out a list, make a good essay. I can't do that. And then speak to, maybe those who are in power, maybe you have the connections. Now, I don't know what you, Thomas Baden Reese reckons that the Rockefellers, no, not the Rockefellers, the
the Rothschilds,
the Rothschilds know here. Yeah. I don't know if that's, if he was joking or not, but I mean,
yeah. I mean, I doubt very much. I doubt very much that they know who I or have heard of me. And I don't have any connections with any elites. I'm afraid.
Well, I don't think he's saying the connections, but it's more like, Let's just try to think. I think he's right from this perspective. If for instance, this is a movement, if you want to think about it like that, and we have figures in any movement, you can have figures that the general public may have heard about. If the movement's big enough, you'll have But the general public is not who I'm talking about right now. Those people who are elites, they will have fingers everywhere, right? Whether they, and I'm not talking about like infiltration or anything, but like they'll have feelers everywhere because they want to know what's going on. And if it's a case that the dissident right is on the minds of the elites, the good elites, the bad elites, they're going to know certain people. They're going to know of the names, at least, just like I know the names of certain politicians somewhere. And I don't have any connection to them. I don't know them. I just know that, oh, in that country, there's this politician who represents something. I don't like.
What I would say is that, you know, the elites, Jacob Rothschild, whatever, he has no need to know of my existence. Right? Because I don't have any power. I don't have much influence. And I have much less influence than I did have, say, in 2017. So there's no... I just don't see any reason why he would know of me. But as for that video where I talked about... podcast where I talked about giving a speech, I wasn't talking about giving a speech to the... like. George Soros and Klaus Schwab, the people who are actually in charge today. I was talking about giving a speech to people who are destined for that or could be destined for that.
Right.
People who could get into that if they wanted to, sort of thing. I don't think I could ever dissuade George Soros, Klaus Schwab, Bill Gates. I think those individuals are very much invested in what they're doing. They're not going to listen to me, and they're not going to be persuaded by me, no matter how good my arguments are.
Yep.
So that wasn't the, just to be clear, I wasn't saying I could get Bill Gates on our side.
No, and I didn't get that impression either. But there's different levels and there's different, whatever.
Yeah. But the point of that was, if I had a receptive, intelligent audience, would I be able to get through to them? And persuade them, yes, I think I could. Because I it's just obvious. I mean, the things that need to be said are obvious. Man needs to belong to a place.
Yes.
Man needs women. Women needs man. They both need to have a family. They need to have some kind of religion to belong to. They need to have a sense of the future and a sense of the past. If you care about them, if you don't care about them, then none of this matters. And they can just be slaves. They can just be cattle.
Yes.
But if you do treat them like that, eventually either they will slaughter you or the society will go nowhere and it will become extremely moribund and sickly. And at any rate, it would be a demonic, it would be a really evil society where there was like the Morlocks and the Eloi, where the powerful are just literally eating everyone else. That's not a civilization. I mean, that's not a, it's not even a culture. It's just a grotesque living situation. I wouldn't even call it a society. It's too grotesque to even be called a society. So if that is what the elite are currently building, where we'll all live in pods and be distracted with crap all day on the screen while we're injected with chemicals from McDonald's, that is not civilization, and it's not a society, and it's not a culture. It's grotesque. And so I would say to the elites, if you are building that, then you deserve to get fucking slaughtered. You deserve what's coming for you. Or alternatively, if you can see that that is a grotesque thing to be building, then guess what? People at your level of society are building that. Why don't you stop them? Maybe you really fucking should stop them. That's what I would say to the elite, or people destined for the elite.
And that's the millennial woes elite pill. So what is your actual personal view on, for instance, let's say the, I'm getting dark over here. Let me see here. Let me bump that up a little bit. On the, I did it. Okay, good. On the quote unquote end times or dark age or iron age or wolf age. Like, do you think that we're heading to this like absolute crescendo that's going to be the end of, let's say,
like a night?
What? who was it? Was it? I think it was your chat with was it with Philosophicat? I can never say her name correctly.
Philosophicat.
Philosophicat. Yeah, Philosophicat. Where it was, you know, there's this basic. It seems like all things are coming to a point. Do you think some people think that we're coming to a point, and then it's either going to be the end of, let's say, our civilization, or it's going to be the end of all things as we know it? Some people think it's going to be end of all things. And then some people think it's going to be, there's going to be this new thing that bursts out of it. That's not exactly what the Klaus Schwab elites want, that there's going to be, that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. What is your personal, if I may ask, view on this?
Right. Well, obviously I've got to be careful.
Oh, right.
To distinguish between what I would like and what is probable. Yeah. And you know, that can be difficult. Because you can just kid yourself that what you want to happen is likely to happen. But what I do, if I'm going to be objective here, I think that what they want they probably will bring it in, but I don't think it will last very long, because I think it's so anti-human that it and so oppressive. It takes as a given mass surveillance. Constant 24-hour surveillance of people, and even perhaps eventually of people's thoughts. I think Klaus Schwab actually mentioned that in one of his conversations. I think there's a clip of him saying it could even monitor people's thoughts. But whatever. Either way, even if they don't do that, this system takes as a given mass surveillance, and that's extreme oppression. And so it's so anti-human that I just don't think it would work for very long. Also, if they are going to continue changing the demographics, eventually these societies will become untenable, unsustainable, because there just won't be enough high IQ people. But yeah, that would take decades for that situation to come about. What I think is likely to happen is that one way or another, this surveillance society, the totalitarian society that they're currently building, will fall apart. And probably a lot of the people who are currently in the globalist elite will survive that falling apart.
Right.
They'll just change their tune. They'll just change their ideas and become much more realistic, much more humble and less utopian. I think they'll... One way or another, even if some individuals are carried over into the new elite, I think the new elite will be still globalist and still technocratic, but probably cut down to size, like more humble and more realistic about human nature, and perhaps see themselves as facilitators rather than visionaries and rulers. And they might actually enjoy that role more, because it will be a bit less responsibility. Because the falling apart might well teach them that they cannot handle the responsibility of stewarding humanity, because I don't think they can. I think that Klaus Schwab is not a realistic man, not a very serious man, because I don't think he's taken account of human nature before he came up with his grand designs. So that tells you he's a dreamer. Even if he's a very good operator, he's still not a very serious man.
Yeah,
in the way that matters.
I might agree and disagree only on this front. Basically, so regarding sort of anti-lockdown, anti-COVID, anti-mask measure, all that sort of thing. You look at the normies and you look at also people on our side, and it's like, man, I just wish I want things to. The idea of going back to normal, what we consider normal is something that our grandparents would have never thought was normal. And what our grandparents, you know, let's say World War II, post-World War II, you know, people in their 20s, 30s would have thought was normal, would be something that their own grandparents would be like, what? What is this? And so if, for instance, there is such a malleability that's shown, I mean, within the last 100 years, and certainly before that as well. It seems to be that there's a longer take on all this, and I think a lot of us are hoping that things are going to change quick. And you know what? It could be that they don't. You know, there's this idea that the Kali Yuga is like 400,000 years long, and there's golden ages, and there's iron ages, and there's dark ages, and all this, and there's ups and downs. And at this point, I have to look at it just like this. I am, on one hand, I'm terrified to be born in this age. And I'm also terrified of the responsibility that I have to bear, because obviously my parents didn't bear that responsibility. And I don't mean my parents personally, although I believe that all of our parents, by going along with things, bear that responsibility. And your responsibility, my responsibility, is actually to realize what is at stake in our own locality, but also for our people. And then again, from a worldwide perspective, like what do you want? Do you want in the future? Do you want in the future everyone to be, literally everyone, the only food available be in some international conglomerate? The only farm, the only vegetables you get is like this massive carrot instead of a more traditional carrot, where you can't have your own gardens. Everything has some sort of fertilizer, some sort of chemical. Now, obviously, everything is inundated, right? Like the soil, you can be very careful to not have anything in your soil, but it's going to have something in it for sure. So there's nothing that's pure. And I think that you have talked about this a lot. Like the idea of purity spiraling has no end. You have to accept where you are, right? We have to accept where we are. And part of that is like...
Well, yeah. You know, we can't go back to the 1950s. Yeah. But I wouldn't want to go back to the 1950s. We right. can't go back to the 1890s, but I wouldn't want to go back to the 1890s. We can't go back to the 1990s. Now, I have nostalgia for the 1990s. That's why it keeps coming up. I've noticed last few nights, I keep mentioning the 90s. And right. I've noticed this in myself over the last year or so, that I do have a lot of nostalgia for my, you know, adolescence, childhood. Perhaps because of the stage of my life that I'm at. But either way, I know that the 90s was not a golden age. It wasn't the peak of human civilization, yeah. And it wasn't that great. And it was only 20, 25 years away from where we are now. So there's not enough distance from this nightmare for the 90s to be worth a worthwhile destination. Obviously... You know, you ask what I want. The past is fascinating, and it is very interesting, especially different eras that one has lived through oneself. But obviously, we can't ever go back to 2016 or 2013. You know, these are gone as well. The only way is forward. And I think that, obviously what that means is that we need to pull power so that we can influence the way things go. I do think that complaining from the sidelines, maybe that is, you know, for a lot of us, maybe that is the role that we have to accept and just settle for that and understand, I'm never going to be the CEO of some lobbying organization or an NGO that is influencing public opinion. But some of us, you know, ideally we would be influencing people who are destined for those roles. But as for what I want in terms of society, I'm more open-minded than some people might think, from what I've been saying on Millennial. You know, I am open to nanotechnology. I have some time for genetic engineering. I think it's a reality. It's going to happen whether we like it or not, for all sorts of reasons, you know, both national and global and individual. I think there's a certain naivety and myopia in just being opposed to modern technology and future technology. I think some people have a romantic notion of, would just reject all of this. And, nature gives us all the tools we need to survive. No, it doesn't. Yeah. That's bollocks. That's just rubbish. It just doesn't. That is a dream. Now, obviously, what you do in response to that is a different matter. It's complicated. It doesn't mean that you have to genetically engineer your kids to be a different species than you or whatever. But obviously, there are all sorts of different things there. I think that just objectively, globalist consumerism, yes, it's convenient, but it's also dehumanizing and empty. And it also means that a great portion of the population literally are going to have nothing to do. They're going to have nothing to do except watch media on a screen. So that isn't a life. And it might even be that we end up artificially making things difficult so that people's lives have meaning again. Like, you know, the old thing about the communist, one guy has to dig a hole and then the other guy has to fill it in again. I wouldn't be surprised if we end up doing that, because our technology has become so good that we could live with no struggle at all. And so we actually have to create struggle. There's a novel. Oh, God, what was his name? The guy who wrote Empire of the Sun. I always forget his name. H.G. Ballard. One of his novels is about a...
Did you say Itchy Balls?
No. J.G. Ballard.
Sorry. Stupid.
One of his novels is about a middle-class housing complex where the residents are so bored, where everything is so good and so fine and comfortable, and that they're very bored. So that they actually have to start... And so a guy realizes the solution to this is to artificially generate crime around the resort, so that the natives have the residents have something to worry about. They have something to do, and they have something to fight against. And I can imagine that happening on a grand social scale, actually inducing problem. And COVID, that brings us back to COVID. There are things with COVID where it clearly actually it's had a certain effect that some people like. You know, some people like this new sense of civic duty, responsibility to other people, a sense of responsibility, which was missing. It was absent from many people's lives for decades. Now that gives their lives meaning. And this is one of the reasons why a lot of people cling to it so much, because it's given their lives meaning that literally wasn't there. This is a very, again, it's a very complicated matter.
If I may, there's a bit of contrast there. For instance, I have an acquaintance I used to be part of this Telegram chat until I realized how degenerate it was. And there's a tribal member in that chat who gave me this cynical take reason why multiculturalism must happen. And the reason that multiculturalism must happen is so that there's a struggle for humanity to go through, especially the European man. And I was like, geez. But that struggle would have to be taken on by the European man on the street. Whereas COVID, it seems to be that all of the answers lie somehow way up high, somehow in the elite. And whether that's the elite that are like, take ivermectin. Now, Nathan, what's your take? Are you saying ivermectin's a bad idea? I'm saying this. Listen, I don't like the idea where we have to take the Quaxine on one side, or we got to take some other pharmaceutical on the other side. And your two mainstream ideas are take this pharmaceutical or take this pharmaceutical, rather than yourself stepping toward the solar man, becoming strong, stop eating crap, doing your one push-up a day, making sure your core is strong so that you got good posture and you can breathe well and your blood is not full of crap. And there's, you know, so I would kind of, here's my take on it. Nathan, if you had to construct a world, what would it look like? Well, I'm not sure I could do that, but what I think would be great is if everyone understood where their food was coming from, and that the major push for every country wasn't international trade, but producing the food that all of them need. So Japan produces all of its own food, like we used to, basically. except for luxury items. And I know that that may not come back, but that has to be in the background of, that has to be the firmament, not the firmament, the foundation. For instance, right now in Japan, the average age of a farmer is 74 years old. 74. That's the average age of the farmer. And the government is starting to freak out. They're like, oh my God, we don't have enough farmers. What do you do? Oh, I got it. We'll import Filipinos and Vietnamese. That's their answer. Now, in school, what are they teaching the kids? You got to be a computer programmer. You got to be a newspaper editor. And their foundation is so backwards. Now, you can go into the future and use all the amazing technology that we have. And I think this is a great way to think about it. Use the technology we have and the progression of technology, but you focus on your own people making their own food. If suddenly your farmer class dies out and the only people making the food are foreigners, what happens when those foreigners go home? Engineered famine all over. And it's so... I believe, personally, that nature does give us basically everything we need. However, we also are part of nature. You and me are part of nature. And our natural desire, some people will say that the European man is Faustian and other peoples are not Faustian, whatever. And the push for this idea of progress, whether it's philosophical, whether it's material, whatever, but you push to invent things, you push to do things. But those things should all, everything that you make, everything that you invent, everything, every new philosophy should be incorporated into bettering the situation of your people, but making sure that those people have the foundations. Most important thing is you got to have a roof on your head and you got to eat. And it's not like, okay, we should only focus on those things, but that has to be the basic principle of any society that wants to sustain itself into the future and use the technology to do that. But the moment you focus on computers or design or newspapers or whatever else, and those are important, those have their places, but as the moment that takes precedence over making your own food, that's it. It's gone.
See, I would say a similar thing about pharmaceuticals. There was a thing early in the COVID crisis where they said that a lot of our drugs, medicines, are actually manufactured in China. So we can't afford to fall out with China because then we'll have no drugs. And I remember thinking,
that's insane.
Fucking mental is it that we're reliant on any other country for something as crucial as pharmacy.
As your medicine, right?
It's just unbelievable. But of course, this is what globalization leads to. It makes inevitable.
Well, even before that, I mean, you have your medical mafias where you basically make all of the doctors in the country part of the same medical system. So you lose your independent doctors. I'm not talking about, the quackery. I'm not talking about natural. I'm not talking about stuff that's outside of the modern medicine. But even in the modern medicine, once you get people part of the AMA or the Canadian equivalent, they all have to abide by the same rules. And then eventually they're going to be put into a general hospital. You're going to lose your doctor coming to your house and being able to, he comes in your house like, you know what? There's a smell. Oh, it's mold. If you go to the doctor right now at a hospital, they're not going to be able to tell what's wrong with you because of your environment. They're just going to be like, oh, he's got a sore knee. He's got the sniffles. Well, we'll just give him this medicine. It all stems from the moment you take away the sort of natural, like your natural location, the natural needs of your person, and you you make a conglomerate of the things that are supposed to treat ailments that basically there's no way they can ever figure out.
You need a comprehensive view of the person's life and their being. I agree with that. I mean, one of the problems with modern medicine is that it's too it's too based on treating the symptoms rather than finding
cause.
This has been a thing for quite some time, but of course nothing ever happens. Nothing's ever done about it because it's one of those questions we don't want to answer because it would mean letting go of it would require a huge overhaul of the way we teach medicine. Inertia. But anyway, look, I want to cut this one at this point, because I think we've touched on so many issues, and it's fascinating. There's obviously a lot to be explored. But in the meantime, I think people have been given a good introduction to you. Do you want to tell people where they... I mean, there is obviously the link to... let me see what it is. I think it's to your Telegram. No, it's to your Odyssey channel. Do you want to tell people about the Telegram as well?
Also, I got a Telegram channel as well. And the only reason I got it up is because I used to post VMs and people like, hey, you know what? It's hard to see where it is. So why don't you make a channel? So I made a channel and I did ones like voice. I don't know. This is a microphone. So voice ones. And then my Odyssey is just the ones that are with the video. And I might put the video, the voice ones up there. I also, by the way, when I was talking about Soy Boy stuff, I got a consumer channel. I'm not going to advertise that here because it's pointless. But if you guys ever find like if you, you know, you're researching about cameras or you're researching about something consumer stuff, and you find a guy that's not just one of these total leftists, support them in some way. But yeah, basically I just got a Telegram channel here, and I've got a project coming up. The one that I originally talked to you about, and it's going to be a DIY focusing on fixing the self, but the self as a representative of other people. You know, the people, and that will be called Prolly. It will be on YouTube, and it will be hopefully dog whistly in a very comfortable way for the normie.
Right,
but that's upcoming.
Could you just describe what you mean by the self as a representative of the people? What
okay, well, that? I will be putting myself on full display. In other words, I will be doing before and after photographs of a sort of a weakish body, not a strong body, not a weak body, but like a body that's just right in the middle that hasn't really been tested. I will basically be showing how to, I'm just learning how to do stuff, failing and learning, failing and trying with exercise, with building stuff, with reading stuff. And it's going to be aimed for the normie to sort of focus away from doing the video games, focus away from watching films, focus away from anything that's not just trying small stuff and succeeding in the small things and then going up from there. That's about it. That's about it.
That does sound interesting. I hope it also goes on to Odyssey.
It'll be on Odyssey mirrored from YouTube, yeah.
Okay, good, good. There are a couple of questions. Hold on a second. I've always found it surprising that the Japanese and the Koreans have such low birth rates. They're such attractive people, you'd think they wouldn't mind reproducing.
They didn't used to have low birth rates. It used to be 5 to 6 children per woman around 100 years ago, and it fell off very, very quickly after World War II, down to basically 2, right in the 50s, I think, in the 60s. And now it's, of course, 1.5 or something like that. It's not about attraction. It's about, I mean, people used to live on farms in compounds with their parents. And you would grow up and share the responsibility with your immediate community. And now everyone's packed in tiny little flats or tiny little homes, and the commute. And it is, man, it's crap. It's crap. It's hard. The society has basically made it very, very hard to have kids. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is another aspect of modernity that clearly needs, I mean, yes. Okay. And then there was another question. Somebody put up an emoji of a figure pissing onto the YouTube logo. So obviously someone who prefers Odyssey. and then, okay, here's a question. Why would a foreigner living in Japan be excited about the borders opening up? I've seen this attitude and could never understand it. I presume he's talking about why would someone go to Japan for the unique culture and the people there, but then be excited about the Japan opening its borders?
I don't know.
I'm not sure
I understand the question, but yeah.
I'm not sure who he's referring to. I'll just read. Why would a foreigner living in Japan be excited about the borders opening up? I've seen this attitude and could never understand it. I don't know.
It could be because I was talking about... I might have mentioned that there's a lot of foreigners here that are super duper excited about Japan becoming, it's a very strange thing. People come to Japan. This is crazy. Progressives come to Japan knowing they're drawn to it because there's still a uniqueness about it. But once they get here, they want it to become facsimiles of their country in terms of the laws, the philosophy, etc. And they want, suddenly they want the multiculturalism. They don't understand that when they do that, the uniqueness of Japan is going to disappear. I think that's probably what they were referring to.
So this is like Ramsey Paul's cliche of the liberal, the white liberal who moves to a white area and then because they couldn't stand the diversity. So they move to a white area and then immediately start set about making it diverse.
Yeah.
It's difficult to find, it's difficult to think of anything more annoying than somebody who behaves like that. And then somebody asks, as is Ralph Blunsom asks, I would like to hear more about the Japanese response to multiculturalism. Is there a Japanese nationalist movement that rejects multiculturalism?
So not in the mainstream, of course. I mean, just like how we operate sort of outside of the mainstream in our own cultures. Well, Japan, because it's still, I don't know what the percent, the government officially says it's like 97% Japanese, but those figures are off. There's just simply no way it's that high. It's probably between 90 and 93% Japanese. And you're like, oh, that sounds heavenly in terms of, you know, the ratio of your population to foreigners. However, what exists there is the Japanese still, they look around and they generally see Japanese on TV. They see Japanese writing their, you know, Japanese names writing their newspapers. They see Japanese faces in their workplaces. And what they think when they hear something from, they hear input, is it's coming from a Japanese perspective. I don't think they even understand that they are already, they're a conquered society, that they lost, once they lost World War II, they're no longer working for their own ends. And that the people that are above them are working for, you know, the economic concerns, the philosophical concerns, everything else, the structure of society has changed to mimic in some way the United States. And because of that, they don't understand underneath the surface. So they just see a Japanese person speaking and they're like, okay, that comes from, you know, that comes with, most people are honest, right? And they hear that and they honestly think that that person is representing good faith arguments. And I will be walking down the street and there's old people like in their 80s and 70s and they'll see my daughter and like, oh, that's, they will immediately say, that's the shape of the future for Japan. And it's like, phew. I mean, that's, if you want to know how conquered Japan is, that is almost the exact, that's what I get every single time, almost.
And that's from old people. They're not sad about that.
They, you know what? I hope that they are. But what I see on their faces and how I read their reactions and is, it doesn't, now maybe I'm not the best reader of all that. It doesn't seem like that, no.
That's incredible. I mean, I have heard that the atomic bomb had a massive psychological effect on the Japanese because it's such a total defeat that it sort of crushed any notion that they could direct their own future from that point. They just had to do what the conqueror said they had to do.
It's possible. I don't know. I mean, I cannot go into psychology, but it's tough to see that. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds awful. Well, I'm sorry about that. Anyway, okay, well, let's... I don't think there are any other questions. Let me just double-check. Okay, yeah, that seems to be it. Okay, so excellent. Well, thank you very much, Nathan, from Snorkel Blog. And people can find your... the Odyssey channel is linked directly below. And people can find... I'll also add the link to your Telegram channel. So, okay.
If I may, I'll add the YouTube one that I was talking about in the future. I'm hoping to open it up in the next 2 weeks. I've said that for the last couple of months, but the DIY man on display, I'll add that. It's got no content at the moment, but it should explode soon.
Okay. Well, I hope it does and good luck with it.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Nathan, from Snorkel Blog for taking part in Millennial. I'll be back in about half an hour with the final one for tonight, which is Radical Liberation. He's an American. He's a bit of a libertarian, but I think he's, you know, not recovering from libertarianism. Okay, so I'll see you then. In the meantime, bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye. Thank you, guys.
Millennial Woes has created many things, and this is your chance to own one of them. A unique piece of work handcrafted by the Vile Vlogger to commemorate Millennial 2021. 100 hours of highly skilled labor went into producing this animated vector graphic, which can be magnified to any size. In the iconic Millennial Woes font, it glistens and responds to your touch. And at the center of it all, a figure representative of 2021, the White Stag, symbolizing endurance, discovery, and rejuvenation. This one-of-a-kind creation is up for sale as an NFT. Follow the link below, and it can be yours forever. This is your only chance.